Welcome to Esoteric Modulation, episode 15, Touched by H9. Esoteric Modulation is your podcast that covers all the wild and wonderful world of modular, exciting and unusual instruments, guest interviews, sound snippets, and we also take a look into interesting sound and visual art projects too. I'm Ed Ball.
And I'm Ben Wilson. Hey Ed, how's it going?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. I've bought a few things. I'm waiting for a few things. I've heard that the OM1 is just about to ship, so I'm really looking forward to getting that cassette synthesizer. And you know what? The more I listen to that thing, the more I fall in love with that sound. I'm really looking forward to that. And just putting it through some sort of effects chain, I think it's going to be really hauntingly beautiful. Well, I hope it is anyway.
Yeah, I like the idea of printing effects onto the tips as well, because once you start pulling the pitch, and it sounds weird to say the pitch of a reverb, but you record a droning note with effects on, or a pulsing note with effects on, you start pulling it around, the way those effects change kind of re-pitch on tape is really interesting too. So pre-embedded effects in the tape, and of course effects downstream post-instrument, is going to be an interesting thing.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to that. And I've bought another CV Ball cassette just to sort of play around with as well, which would be quite nice when I get that. So I'm looking forward to getting that. Before Christmas, I said that I bought the Micro Granny, which I'm having real fun with. It's got a lovely sound to it. If you upload your WAV files into it, it's 16-bit sound. If you record directly through the microphone, it's 8-bit. And that really gets a really nice grainy sound to it, that 8-bit effects. I love that. So yeah, been messing around with that. And as you said last time, for the price, it's a lovely little bit of kit it is. It's really nice.
I like this idea of wandering around with an 8-bit microphone recorder. It's the most ridiculous thing to do in 2019, 2020 or anything. Just, you know, we go around with these high quality recorders. In contrast, when I saw Richard Devine, who was over for some work at Huddersfield University, I was asking for the absolute best technical quality recorder. And we spoke about the D100 from Sony in terms of its mic and preamp quality and high sample rates. And then I love this idea of you wandering around with this little coloured plastic box that's doing 8-bit recording.
Well, that's the absolute beauty of that thing. It's battery operated. Yeah. It's got a little microphone in there. You can just take it with you everywhere. And the great thing was that I was on the train just before Christmas, and I just had it on the train, headphones in, messing around with it. It's a great little thing to have in your bag.
Yeah, and capturing air that's moving. I still say this about running synth through amps and things like that, but similar to Matthew Shaw's Totemic Topologies, where he has a little micro cassette dictaphone, and to get that into his OP1 from Teenage Engineering, he just holds it up to it. So he just held a recorder, recorded something. That's life that's being captured. That's a real moment. It's not a direct recording off a synth or something like that, which of course real too, but he's captured this real tangible, almost like living space that he's in. And then he just holds the OP1 up with its mic and then plays it out of the dictaphone speaker into the OP1. But all those processes, as you hear and we discussed when Matthew was on the show, it leads to a really beautiful world that I think you'd really struggle to synthesize if you're trying to do it artificially. I don't think you could do it.
See, that's the weird thing, isn't it? I know Matthew's big, isn't he, on that, using microphones and, you know, low sort of lo-fi microphones. But if you was to try and replicate that somehow, you'd find it very, very hard to do it, wouldn't you? But just the fact of putting your speaker up to your microphone, you're getting, as you say, this beautiful airiness, aren't you? You're capturing your sound in time, which is, I think, a beautiful thing to do.
It's that randomness of life. You know, if you thought, oh God, that train going past sounded great, I'll hold the Micro Granny up to the window. Well, you've got the sound coming through the window for a start, which you'd have to try and model. But then there's no accounting for two seats down, someone rustling a crisp packet. That might be the best bit of the recording. This rustling might just be this amazing thing that you decide to loop and layer and build effects on. So yeah, I don't think you could do it otherwise. I think I might have to get a Micro Granny. I like the idea. The grandpa's great. The Eurorack version.
You know what? I think, yeah, you should do, because just for the price, I think they're brilliant. And the sort of the creativity that you can build up within them, I think is great too. So I've been playing around with that and enjoying that. And then over Christmas, I pulled the trigger on something that on the outset doesn't look esoteric, okay? But it's one of these things that whenever I go to shows, I have a play around with it, and I just love the sound, and I love playing with it every time. And it's been like on my mind for years, and it's a Nord Drum P3, and I love it. I absolutely love it. I think what I really like about it is that it's not sample based, it's sound design based. And for me, I really wanted something on the percussion end, a synthesis. I was sorely lacking with that because I sold the DFAM, and I just wanted something percussion based. And I love that the sounds in it can be manipulated to very, very unusual percussion sounds, unlike stuff I've heard before, to be fair. And it's a standard instrument, if you like, that I'm hoping to take into esoteric territory. That's my idea of it. And to have this percussion elements in certain compositions that are not out and out drums. But again, I'm trying to make this very gesture based, so I can actually play the Nord drum into the looper and then affect that loop with gesture based actions. So yeah, I got that. And I love it, Ben. The sound is just awesome. I know Richard Devine's quite big on using his, I think he's got a Nord 2, hasn't he, where that's got all the CV inputs, and he uses that in a lot of live gigs.
Yeah, Richard's been a long-term user of the Nord Drum 2. It's a really powerful engine. I have a Nord Drum 2 here that I kind of sampled out, and I tend to just pull samples more than use it these days, but it's a really powerful synthesis method. And, you know, would be being Nord and their micro modular environment. Was it the G series, the G modular from Nord? Yeah. Never had one, but I've seen the images in the editor. It's almost this like Max MSP interface of synthesis. Really capable. Same with the Nord Drum 2. You know, you kind of want 808-like kicks, which I find it increasingly less and less interesting to try and model other machines on other machines.
Yeah.
It's great having them in modular. You know, here's an 808 bass, here's a 909 clap, here's whatever. They're kind of tried and tested tools. But with things like the Nord Drum, I like hinting at those things without it being exactly that. Or going, as you say, completely esoteric. And it's a really powerful engine with kind of membrane modeling with the waveforms. So I'm interested to see where you take it.
It's one of those things I thought, oh no, is that just a little bit sort of standard? And obviously, you know, I'm always looking for instruments that are different, but I've always loved it, always loved playing it, and I've got it. And it is, it's fantastic. And also the thing is the physicality of playing it as well. I mean, I can do MIDI sequences into it, but I love the idea of physically playing it into a loop and then affecting the loop with something. So that's sort of the path I'm going to go down with that.
Yeah, and you can do weird and wonderful things with an acoustic drum kit or an 808 or a 909 or, you know, any of these things. So the fact that the Nord's way more capable in its synthesis and its sound design, I can easily see. How are you going to push it into this kind of little weird and wonderful world that you're trying to build?
Yeah, and also I've bought a real piano. I've wanted one for a long, long time. And I find it really beautiful just pottering around on a piano. I'm not a massive player, but I find it very meditative process playing the piano. And I've never really got one because I've always moved around a fair bit and thought, okay, well, if I'm moving in a few years' time, it's a big thing to lug around. But we're fairly sort of settled here. So I thought, yeah, okay, it's about time I got one. And just looked in the sort of local area for someone selling one and got a really nice one. And I've been really pleased with it. And I've just been literally tinkling days away on it. So it's been really nice.
It's lovely. I really love this idea of just families having a piano in the house. Mine didn't growing up, grandparents and things like that. They'd all gone by that point. But it was a thing. Everyone just had an upright in the room. Yeah. That was the entertainment and everyone could play a little bit.
Yeah.
I used to, at any chance at music college or uni, if a practice room was open and had a piano in, I'd wander in and just lose time. Yeah. I'd really love a piano. I'd really love a Rhodes as well, to be fair. But
oh, I'd love a Rhodes.
So a cheap piano. Yeah, I'm going to try and get an upright. There's just this magic to it. It's a bit like the sampling we talked about. There's loads of fantastic contact libraries, and I've done piano work and commissioned work for bits of TV stuff, and I did an ambient piano album that's been used all over, and that's great. But I only got one track on a real piano that was when my friend was actually playing it. I thought, this warrants it. It's a proper piano player. Let's go record it. And it's great. And even when they're not quite right and it's a bit more lo-fi recording, it's still great.
Yeah, and I think that's what I quite like about it. I like that, I mean, mine isn't tuned yet, but it's not far off. I quite like it like that. And it's just got these, you know, when you're listening to it and you got a sustained note, you just hear all these harmonics coming in and out. It's just very beautiful and very organic, very unelectronic. But yeah, been really enjoying it, really enjoying it.
It's lovely when you hold the pedal down and you hit a key and the whole thing is resonating.
Yeah.
Effectively a big wooden box that's a resonator.
Yeah.
It's like when you're sampling a drum kit. And I used to find this with early sample libraries. You'll hear the kick drum, and they've clearly just put a bass drum in a room and recorded it very well.
Yeah.
But you think, when you hear the snare drum rattles and the rest of the kit resonates, you hear the toms just sing very quietly in the background.
Yeah.
You know, you crack the snare and it might be that loud that the cymbals just kind of tinkling off. And I've always leant towards those, the kind of real recordings. And some of them now, there's some great ones that I couldn't name names because it's a long time since I've used them, but almost let you control bleed. And when I do use them, I just tend to crank it up. So if I want acoustic drums and I'm having to sample them because recording is cumbersome, I don't have them here, blah, 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 I want the bleed. I want it to seem real.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just pull audio files in. If I just want the air quotes best bass drum recording, I'll just pull a sound in. So yeah, I'd love a piano for that reason. It's this realness again, isn't it? We're back to this, even though in 8-bit, but recording the real world with samplers and tape and all those things. It's this tangible thing. You've only got a bit of play, a few chords or something. It sounds great.
Yeah,
a few notes here and there, big effects chain.
Yeah. Yeah, that into the micro grana direct. Yeah, I haven't tried that yet, but I will be. So that's wrapped sort of my Christmas New Year's up, really. It's been really busy tinkering around with all those. And plus, I've been working on a project as well, which we'll talk about later. But what you've been up to and what you've been working with?
Well, I got to hear the wonder of the Ed Ball bass tone and through the magic of podcasting. Everyone else can too.
Ooh.
That is brilliant.
That is the sound of my childhood bass synthesizer that you've got in your hands there.
I was back on an eBay cruise again, which seems to happen every time we talk, but I found a Casio VL Tone for £10. With a couple of quid postage for art. It'd be rude not to poor thing sign a charity shop on eBay.
Yeah.
It'd be worth grabbing. And that is, what's the code for that sound again?
So yeah, it's 600-999-00 when you've put with the Casio VL1, you've got set sounds, not many of them and not very good. And you've got a little ADSR section that you can create your own sounds through a calculator interface. And that was my absolute favorite sound I created. Put it on the lowest octave, so it's really bassy. Then put it through a small stone phase shifter and then into a nice amplifier. And I absolutely loved it as a kid. It was just my absolute favorite. In fact, I went on to get a second VL tone, slightly detuned them. And with the sequencer, you pretty much spot on. You could make a sequence on both, start them at both the same time, and you would get like a dual oscillator version of it as well, which I did later on. But to be fair, it sounds a little bit weak coming through its speaker there, doesn't it, into the microphone?
It does. Yeah, playing it back, me through the speaker on the VL tone, and me, I was trying to go for a tremolo vibe. I was waving it around frantically in front of this mic. It's probably going to sound horrible in podcast. Does sound very good. I had it into some interfaces and into some amps and things. It sounds good. And like I said, it's a limited sound set. You know, there's piano, violin, fantasy. That's quite a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Guitar and ADSR. But I love this idea of, it's almost like trading mixtapes or baseball cards or something, isn't it? Like trading off calculator numbers to program your VL tone.
I know, as soon as you got that, I went, right, put this in 600-999-00. That is my sound. But I've been wanting to get one of these. But I have to say, you did really well because they're going fairly expensive. I mean, I'd want one in fairly good condition.
Yeah.
And they're around about £100.
It's too much for what it is. is. It's still a toy, really.
It's a toy. And although, for me, it's got two great sounds on it that I'd be willing to buy 30 quid for these two great sounds. And that is the 600-999-00, which is the bass sound. And the Fantasy, I love the Fantasy. Put the Fantasy through a nice reverb and it sounds lovely.
Yeah, and like anything, you know, you look at it like a raw instrument, like, say, a guitar, you put it through amps, you distort it, you run pedals.
Yeah.
Treat it like that, which I think often with synths, whether they be kind of VL Tone toy like or big mammoth vintage polysynths, we sometimes forget that you can still do that. You can still completely change it after it comes out of the instrument. Whereas others, you know, like a guitar, there's nothing to think of adding some drive to a guitar, yeah, or some delay, or it's just this part and parcel of it. So it's a bit dismissive to say it's a bit of a toy, but I wouldn't have picked it up at £100.
No, that's a thing. I'd love one in good condition, but they're just a little bit too expensive for me at the moment. That was my first keyboard that I ever bought, and it's just got such fond memories of it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm going to build some things up with it, with pedals. I've got some pedal videos to do this year as well as modular, and I think I'll probably use that as some of the input source material.
Yeah.
So it'll be seen around the channel. It's going to get some use. But yeah, as well as that, I've been playing around with a few things. Thinking of pedals, the Planetarium from Neon Egg. They very nicely sent one over a while ago. But it's a really nice thing of an input stage that then has chorus, delay, reverb, and a compressor after the effects.
Oh, wow.
We tend to think the dynamics processing and the EQ is kind of the front end of what any processing chain usually is, and then all the time-based and kind of wet effects, as it were, tend to be at the end. But the compressor, you can sidechain it as well, which I think is the real intention of why that is there, so that you can create this huge ambient world and then pump it against something else. You know, with a guitar, there's not really that much sustain. Thinking of like these big dance music kind of pads that are sidechaining, you can't really do that with a guitar. The sound doesn't sustain long enough to have something to pump against. So by creating this ambient world around it, delays and reverbs, you can then have something to pump against, as it were, and you can hear the rhythmic thing. But even without the sidechain, I've enjoyed just compressing reverb trails. So without having to make them longer, I can just bring their presence up. It's almost like a hold effect. If you imagine it decaying in a linear straight line, which it isn't. But by compressing it, it almost flattens out for a while as you've pulled so much of it up before it decays, rather than just going, oh, I want more of it and having to turn the decay time up.
Yes.
It's a thing I've done in software for a long time, kind of EQ before the reverb, which this doesn't have, but EQ so I can really control what's going in.
Yeah.
Rather than what's coming out, because I think I spoke about this on the Milo Melodies Why We Bleep that I did. I don't want to send a load of low end into a reverb and then cut it out afterwards, because why even have the reverb process have to deal with it? Just lop it off beforehand. So it's use the EQ reverb, and then maybe EQ again if you want to brighten it afterwards or something, but compression works wonders for then shaping this. Again, treat it like an instrument. Treat it like the source dry sound that you think, oh, my beats need a bit of compression. Just treat it all like that. And it might be really subtle, but having it on a pedal, I think, is a really unique thing. And having it at the end of those effects, and it's stereo in and out as well.
Yeah.
It's a lovely thing, the Planetarium.
I'll have a look at that.
Yeah, it's been good fun. Again, it'll start to be seen around the channel soon.
Yeah.
Another thing that's been fun, very Heimbach inspired, the Model 1613 passive bandpass filter from Bruhl & Kjær.
Oh, I
picked it up months back. And again, it wasn't too expensive, I don't think. £100 or less or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's awkward because the in and outs are the kind of barrel connector you'd get on a pedal power supply. Like a 9-volt DC power in like 2.5 mil barrel or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the, of course, the easy answer is, oh, just make your own cables up. Oh, I'm useless at that.
Time. It's time and burning yourself.
Yeah, but then there are some old electroharmonics pedals that take a mini jack input. So I can't remember the company that make a mini jack to barrel connector cable.
Oh.
And that was a good find for this.
Yeah,
so then I've then just put a coupler on the end. So I now have a female open-ended mini jack socket effectively for the in and out. So I've been running feedback loops around my Yaro rack delays, and it being passive, it might be too much level, but I've not given it any thought. Just wang the output into that, bring it back into the modular. It's been a nice thing. It weighs, it's like a tank. It weighed the single thing weighs as much as the modular case that that's going, that's creating the rest of the sound. So it's awkward and it's cumbersome, but it's in, again, it's interesting, as all these things are.
And also, it looks bloody lovely, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, of course it does. Got really inspired, though, by Cuckoo's Day 1 of Jamuary video on January 1st. And he put this video up talking about Jamuary. And I thought, oh, God, I did like that last year. And by the time he'd finished this little Instagram video, I decided I was going to go upstairs and do something every day in January. And this was kind of late afternoon on day one, so it's maybe a bit stupid, but
Johnny last minute.
Yeah, yeah, super Johnny last minute. But very much inspired by, the more I thought about it, you know, Cuckoo was the catalyst. I saw that video, I thought, oh, yeah, God, I've got to do this. I just kind of ran upstairs and cracked on. But my friend Nigel Mullaney has an album coming out on Din that was last year's. I think he called it the 31-day challenge, but a similar concept, doing something every day. And Nigel just made hours of fully mastered, realized music. Some really great music to come out as an album that's been put together, really thought about and curated from this bulk of content.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to do that, but it's a very inspiring thing to see and know he's done it and to have discussed that with him. So for me, I thought, well, I'll just explore gear. I might make some musical pieces that I would think is a song or a track or a proper realized piece of music. It's not a demo in any way.
Yeah.
Other things will be. There was one up the other day with the Polygogo. It really was me just going, no, what's this thing sound like? Let's plug some modulation in and I'll share it. So there will be a little bit of just exploring gear. There'll be some music. There'll be some kind of techniques. The first one, which I'd like to play a little example of, was me just exploring feedback with the AJH 914 fixed filter bank. No input. Cranking the feedback up into a bit of reverb, no layering, it's all just stereo off the modular. And it's a fascinating kind of sound world that I'm going to turn into a track. I'm going to go back and explore that.
Nice. Let's have a listen to that. I've been knee-deep in feedback as well, which we'll talk about a bit later, but I love this. It's really meaty, but it goes into this liquidy type of sound halfway through. Really nice. How was that built up and how was that structured?
It's just the bands fighting against each other and the spacing of the bands reinforcing different frequencies. At that point where you hear the higher tone come in, that just took over. And you hear that some of the bass kind of subsides because I guess the circuit's just overloading. It's just feeding back. Yeah. One band I've turned up enough manually for it just to catch. And I might go back with the kind of music I want to release with this and, you know, maybe automate that down a touch and tidy it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But all the weird flapping, and I don't really know how it held a bass note and did that kind of like fluttery kind of moving thing. It sounds like multiple layers, but it's really just stereo out of the thing and with some reverb around it. But it's just feedback. And then as you play and excite different bands, that's obviously coming back in. There's probably a little bit of crossover between the bands. So it's this kind of highly, I guess, complex network of potential feedback until you crank one up, which is where those higher notes just take over and sing.
Yeah, sounds like a screaming train coming through.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been working with feedback and it's a strange beast, isn't it? Especially to control. It's very, very hard to control and not going into scream mode, isn't it, with feedback?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. So it will be a piece of music I release with that from this year. And I did film a full kind of breakdown of the patch as well for people on Patreon. So people into that weird feedback stuff, there's more to come. There's been a few Jamuary so far. We're on day four. It's the 4th of January. Yeah. I won't play all of them up to this point of recording, but the next one, Surfing on the Grains of Glasgow. No hints for what that's for.
Yeah.
People can leave a comment if they get what that is.
Yeah. I looked, when you sent these audio over to me, I looked at that and I thought, oh, I know what that is. Should we have a listen?
Yeah, let's have a listen first. Thank you.
Well, soundscapey stuff. It's beautiful. And the trouble with this show is it's expensive, isn't it? Because you're going to tell us about this piece of equipment, and I think I'm just going to have to get one. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, there's no hiding what it is, and surfing on the grains of Glasgow maybe gives it away. But it's ABBA from Instruo, and it's the audio I did from a video looking at granular processing a guitar a couple of weeks back from now. I put that video up over Christmas. It was still in the buffer. So I came to record this for Jammery and was playing around. Started throwing lots of modulation in from Oct. Of course, I'm heavily biased because Oct is my module. I want people to buy it. I want it to be successful. But just...
Well, I guess that's a great pairing, though.
Yeah, actually, just having it drift and just... Again, that's why Oct exists. Just loads of modulation. Yeah. It's all just free running. It's not repetitive. And just having that pull around, grain size, the intensity of the sowing of the grains, the spray, which is... Spray is like a random playback, which you see on a lot of software granular interfaces. It will, you move the playback to halfway through the buffer, it will always play that point with whatever length settings and so on. But you add some spray and it starts to randomize the player position around that. So it's really nice if you're, say, plucking different notes of a chord on a guitar and you kind of zone in on one and add some spray, it will occasionally catch one of the other notes in the buffer. It works really well. But yeah, randomly moving through the buffer, which was just three different guitar chords recorded over the 10-second buffer. And a really nice thing ABBA does, it can randomly shift between reverse playback or forward playback. So when it's a ramp, you get some that are percussive, where it starts and just tails off in level, and others that ramp up and then cut off. And it's randomly spreading that around in stereo as well. So that and a load of effects chains is surfing on the grains of Glasgow. Again, this is going to be a piece of music. I want to put this out as a kind of fully realized thing. I have some little ideas for tweaking it, as we've discussed before. Maybe record all that onto tape, layer that in, maybe half speed the tape, play around in a DAW and build up a bit more of a sound world. But as it stands, I think it's a realized piece as it is. I just want to play around with some little ear tricks in the DAW before I put it out this year. But yeah, fantastic tools. ABBA's been great. Really, really impressed.
Yeah, I really want one of those. I want a lot of stuff. I really want one of those. But for me as well, I love the visual interface on it. It looks really hands-on, really visual, you know, that sort of sliding, almost like surfing light that you go up and down the grains with. It's a real lovely visual interface as well as sounding great too. And again, I'm a visual person and that really speaks to me as well.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be lovely to have a camera on and just have that projected behind you. It'd be great for the audience to see that connection between the two. You know, we spoke about feedback, plenty about what I've just been up to. What have you been up to? Been diving into your commission for Eventide, right?
Yeah, I have. It's been long in the making, this one, as just through lots of different reasons. But I mean, I don't know if I've talked about this much before, may have, so I apologize if I'm talking again. But yeah, I have a painting commission to do for Eventide. The premise behind this is I just take one piece of their equipment, the Space Reverb, and I create a soundscape out of that and a looper, nothing else, basically. So obviously to excite that, I'll just set up a feedback loop into it and then create a soundscape from that. And once I've created the soundscape, then I will paint that soundscape and then that will be shipped off then to Eventide in the USA. It was over a year or so ago now, this sort of all came about. And the commission's heading for Tony Agnello, who is now managing director at Eventide, but he was one of the original engineers. I believe he started around 1973, and he was designing the Eventide H910 harmonizer, which is, you know, a very famed and popular piece of equipment back then that a lot of groundbreaking artists were working with, like AC/DC, David Bowie, Frank Zappa. There's like loads of people that use this to unusual sort of extents, but David Bowie and Brian Eno, when they called Tony Visconti to ask him what he could bring to the table for the new album, he said, "Oh, I've got a machine that fucks with the fabric of time." I love that quote.
I've not heard that before. That's great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So, and then Bowie and Eno was heard. The story goes, Bowie and Eno were heard to drop the phones and begin cheering in the background. So I think they walked hard-tailed it over to Tony's recording studio. And they used H910. on Low, the album Low, and they used it in a very unusual way. They used it for the cascading drum effect on Low. A bit of trivia about that as well, though, because I was looking into this, and Tony paid homage to John Lennon's birthday, 9th of October, and that's why he called the harmonizer 910 and 910, which I thought was quite interesting. And one of the very early beta testers of it was Suzanne Ciani. It's an interesting bit of trivia about that. So yeah, he was the engineer on that, but now director. And so, you know, I'm quite proud that this piece of artwork is going to hopefully hang in his office when it's all finished. Yeah, yeah. The only trouble with this, it has taken me a bit of time, as I said, to get round to. And I've been just messing around with space. You just got to get to know it, haven't you, like any instrument. I've been treating it as an instrument as well and harping back to what we've talked about, you know, effects as instruments. This is the instrument. There's nothing else. And so the equipment I've used for the project is obviously the Eventide Space. That then goes directly out. The outputs of that go directly into the door or the amp and door. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a splitter cable that splits that out that then goes into a really cheap volume pedal, a Daphon volume pedal. I remember talking to you about this before, and I was using the cutter. There's a little sort of mixing cutter for scratch mixing that I was using, but that didn't work. To control the feedback, I really needed something that was very good on volume. And of course, that's very good for scratching, so it didn't have that nice sort of linear curve.
Yeah, the curve of it just doesn't respond to feedback per se.
No, yeah. So I ditched that and bought this sort of cheap volume pedal, and then that volume pedal out then goes into the Ditto loopers in, and then the Ditto looper out then goes back into the Eventide Spaces in. So we've got potentially this feedback loop that I can cut in and out with this volume pedal, which is really essential because I'm riding it all the time. I'm riding it to get effect, but not so it screams at me, basically.
Yeah, you've a loop within a loop because you've got the feedback loop of outs going back to ins, but within that is the actual looper itself, the Ditto X4 that you use.
Yeah.
That's interesting. A loop within a loop.
So that's how it's set up. And before we play the piece, I'll just give you an idea of what reverbs have used, how it started up, and how it built up through all the different reverbs. And this was just trial and error over, you know, a year or so since I've had it, what works. Because some of the reverbs will just go straight to screaming, but some reverbs will act really nicely with the feedback. And then some will act really nicely if you don't give them too much of the right foot on the volume pedal and then go into scream mode. So it's getting to know what those do. So all starts off with Mod Echo Verb, it's called. And that is a nice one to start off with because it catches quite nicely on the feedback. And so the first literal loop is that. That is to get the bass sound down for something to catch on to from there. And then from that, I go into an algorithm called Echo Space God, which just gives it a little bit more depth to it. And then we go into a solar delay. So the solar delay is a lovely sort of spacey delay. So it goes into that. Then the next loop from that is the Nebula Big Reverb. Then that goes into another layer, which is shimmer. So it's the standard shimmer then. So we've got enough body of sound now to start catching those big reverb shimmers.
Yeah.
Then I take that shimmer, because we've got quite a nice little bit of a high end then, and I push that into Nero's Ascent. And what Nero's Ascent does, it gives you that like a little step shimmer. So it's when you listen to it, it's the thing that's in the background, sounds like little church organs stepping up in pitch, just like...
I wondered what that was when I listened.
Yeah, so that's sending all that into Nero's Ascent and catches those little edges and gives that sort of stepped sound. And then from that, we go into Amando Bass Shimmer, which this adds the girth and the bass sort of rumbling below.
So is that like a minus octave shift? That's not going up in terms of shimmering. It's a pitch down.
It's going down, yeah. So it adds a little bit of bass in there and a bit of girth to it, which is quite nice. Then we come around again. We go into a continuum reverb. And then we go around again and we go into Mangleverb Doom Drive. And this is sort of like a delay, reverb and overdrive, a distortion as well. And that comes in about sort of just over halfway through and starts to give that sort of overdriven sound that isn't too high, you know, not like an overdriven feedback, but it's just like an overdriven sound within it. And then we double back through again, lots of layers going on in it, because obviously this is on the ditto. I slam it then onto half speed for this loop, and I put that through Touched by a H9, which is a show title, because I quite like that. Touched by a H9. And that gives a lovely sort of H9-ish flavour shimmer to it as well. Then what I did was take that whole loop there and then put it into Mangleverb Oblivion, which just, it is what it says, it just mangles it up. And what I did there was subtly throughout the track, just brought a little bit of that into for the background. And it's sort of like this warbling sort of deep sound that you get occasionally through it. So that's the one layer. And then, of course, the ditto looper's got two loopers on it. So I wanted to add some modulation into that to make it interesting. So we went on to the modulation type sounds, which are the tremolo verb. So it's got a tremolo verb on there. The very clear modulation on there is just the clean tremolo verb that comes in every now and then. And then I did another pass onto a broken glitch verb. Now, that actually was designed by Richard Devine, that patch. Mm. It's a lovely, lovely patch. And then there's like three different flavors. There's like clean, broken, and then really mangled. And that's the horror show. And I've got all those three for modulation. And I bring them in and out. And then Ditto's got a tape stop feature on that mimics you stopping a tape and you go like that. And so on these high-pitched sort of slow stops, they are me stopping the feedback using the tape on the ditto and then feeding that into the Centurious Black Hole reverb, which is like this amazing infinite sort of reverb. And then the ending, again, is very similar to that. I'm pressing the stop button on the tape on the looper, going into a lot of feedback, then a big tape stop, and then that goes into the cavernous Centurious Black Hole, and that's the ending. So that's all the layers that went into creating this one piece.
Let's take a listen to it. Thank you. I'm fascinated by this. The fact that this purely and definitively is the sound of those Eventide algorithms. And no one can dispute that, because it's just the algorithms feeding themselves. It's nothing else. It's not, oh, well, this guitar demo of space and that's its sound. It is nothing but these algorithms and how they deal with sound as it's fed back to itself. It's fascinating. And across roughly 15 sort of algorithms.
Yeah.
I like the thought process that you described before it started of, I've got to use this one because this is what catches to give me a bass sound without screaming. And of course, a lot of trial and error must have gone in to figure all this out. And then the idea of, then I feed the shimmer because I want some octave up content, and then I get this pitch movement with a church organ one from Nero's Ascent. And just your thought process and artistically thinking, it's now all shimmery and lovely, it needs some low end, so let's use a bass shimmer that is some kind of sub octave shift. And then trying to bring drive in for grit and kind of weight in the mids. It's like sculpture. It's like someone working on sculpture or a painting. And I know that's very much how your brain works, that we've got to start with this because this is what makes sense technically. This is my bass. Forget about what you want to do. It has to have a bass that works. Good foundation. And then each layer. And what's interesting with that is it isn't, to me anyway, it's not like each layer as this piece builds is just kind of, it's a bit boring until you get halfway through and you've got the sound bed. It's really nice to hear how each one comes together. You know, it's not like a singer clapping and making beats and singing with a loop, where really the first loop that is just a couple of finger snaps and a clap.
Yeah.
You're kind of waiting for it to get into, all right, there's some stomps, there's some claps, there's some shaking, there's some bits of backing vocals. It starts to get really interesting as it builds. It's esoteric modulation. That's what we're into, this feedback and sound design and all these things. But it's fascinating from the start. And I like, much like what I'm saying about some of the pieces I want to realize as musical releases, that it's gone into the DAW, making the most of it and just shaping it nicely in there. They're the kind of things that I want to try and get into, of maybe I'll run it into tape and have some auto panning tape version underneath the raw performance, or maybe I'll move from fully dry to fully wet across 5 minutes and I can just draw two lines of automation in a DAW and do that really easily. It's really interesting to hear this come together.
Yeah, the final sculpting was done in the DAW. But yeah, like you say, and it's quite right, I do look at a building sound the same way as sculpting or painting. And for me, it's all about building layers up, the right layers at the right time, the right colors at the right time, you know, the right sounds at the right time, the right frequencies at the right time. And just digging into the space pedal for probably over a year and a half now and getting to know those different algorithms and what they do with feedback paths. Because when you start, you're just like, everything sounds terrible. And then you discover these algorithms that sound good and what you can do with those algorithms. And then you can start piecing it together and going, okay, right, the Mardeco verb is a really good one to give me a bit of something to catch on to and it to be interesting at first. And that was just, again, riding that volume pedal up and down just to get that interest going and the sound going. And then, of course, we've got something to work with then. We've got the bones of it, and then we can start adding these layers on top. I loved it. I really loved it. I'm going to do a couple more. I'm going to do one that I'm going to call Divine Space, which is all of Richard Devine's algorithms that he designed within Eventide Space. But again, like Richard, he's got some very interesting and unusual algorithms in there, like the broken glitch that I used, which was a very good one. So I'm going to do one with just all Richard's presets. And then I'm going to do a third one as well. And then what I might end up doing is just painting all three and then sending the best one off from the collection, and maybe put the sounds up as an EP on Bandcamp or something like that.
Yeah, and potentially have two other paintings available as well. I'm fascinated by the whole thing because my mind just doesn't work that way at all. You know, we're kind of coming at sound from different angles and experiences. It's very much like you've said with painting before, and I think I've brought this up about you in other shows, that you know that certain layers have to go down because you're going to throw paint through the layer, or is it going to sit on top of the layer? How long do I have to wait for it to dry a little bit so I can spatter paint across it? And it's very much that thinking. But as I say, each layer and stage to me is fascinating. It's not a, oh God, give him a few minutes until 10 layers in, it gets interesting. It's a really interesting thing. And your time and experience is why it's interesting from the off, because you've put the time in to find these algorithms and what works and speaks and what makes sense. Really love to hear an EP of it. And I love the idea that this piece and the painting is potentially going to hang in the kind of head office of Eventide. That's amazing.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic, really fantastic. I'm going to have to really apologise to Tony when I send it through. He's probably forgot about it because it's been that long. But there's been a lot of things going on. And to be fair, just to explore that pedal, to get to, like any instrument, to get to a place where you think, actually, I can do something credible with it, took time. This is the starting of the journey that I've wanted to take from painting to create soundscapes, to then paint soundscapes. This will be the first one that I've done using that whole process. So it's quite a sort of a watershed moment for me, really. And when I finished that and listened to it, I had a big grin on my face thinking, I've done it. This is it. This is my first one that I've took an instrument, created a soundscape with the instrument, and I'm going to paint that soundscape. So really, really exciting for me, I have to say.
So I'm really looking forward to hearing these next two pieces, hopefully being able to have an EP and also see the paintings. I'm really fascinated to sort of see how all this comes to be. We have a little bit of news as we move into 2020 with the show, and that is that we're going to take the podcast to be a monthly show. We're aiming for the first Thursday of every month. Reason being, we've loved doing this every 2 weeks, but it takes up a ton of our time in terms of planning and editing, and we simply don't have that time. But the real reason for moving it monthly and the way the show has morphed has been into more audio examples, more bespoke content that we're making for the show. And I think that's really where our strength lies, and what personally I've really enjoyed, kind of our own journeys coming out as stories and bits we've wanted to talk about, but the audio as well. And going to a monthly show will certainly allow us both to have more audio, more kind of juicy content, and just that bit more meat, rather than us trying to just interview a guest every 2 weeks and just trying to kind of roll along. So we're going to go to monthly, first Thursday of every month. We may have some specials every now and then if we end up with some extra content, an extra interview, but we're really looking to kind of pack in all this stuff to the show. And that does mean us going monthly going forward.
Yeah, I think I'm at about 2 days. You're at a day and a half, aren't you, each show? Yeah. Easy, I would say. And just to do that and up the quality that we'd like to would just, you know, take even more time. And I think we've come to the conclusion that that is definitely the best way forward for us.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, it's not just about it takes a day of our time or a day and a half or 2 days. And of course, this is all free. It's not just that. The thing that excites me about going monthly is knowing that if you can use that extra day where we would have had a show to do a similar thing to you've just done with space, and we can channel and document this kind of artistic development with these ideas, and to have that and document that monthly, I think will be a much stronger show. So I'm really looking forward to what it leads to, because I think it's going to be a kind of shifting gear in content. I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's going to be really interesting being able to, I think, put more into the content from ourselves as well. So yeah, really looking forward to that.
And to round off the show, we'd like to shout out our Seattle connections. We've got our good friend, Sir Timothy Held of Podular Modcast. That's a weekly show. Plenty of great modular content and great guests, should you want to keep up with that, at PodMod. Podular Modcast. We've got Ellison doing Waveform Magazine, which both issues have been a great read. I'm sure issue 3 is being planned and will be out pretty soon. We've got Kyle and Robert's Source of Uncertainty podcast. Really enjoying learning about the world of booklet. In terms of synth format, Surge is pulling me that bit further at the minute. Some Surge acquisitions, no Buchla just yet, but I'm totally fascinated by that world. Yeah. So Source of Uncertainty has been a great listen to. And then all the friends at Modular Seattle and Patchworks, the shop, they're cultivating a really special scene that I still kind of have that warm, fuzzy feeling about, to be a bit soft and romantic about it from my time in Seattle. Yeah. So check all of those guys out, and of course, links in the description to all of that.
I think really as well, Ben, we've just run through that. And that's why I'm not worried about going monthly, because there's such an amazing lot of podcasts out there now, isn't there? You know, Tim Weekly, Source of Uncertainty Monthly. We were just talking about Jamie Liddell's podcast, how much we love that, didn't we, earlier on? And there's so much out there that it's not like you're really strapped to find great content, is it?
No, it takes the pressure off. Milo Melody's Why We Bleep, Darwin Gross.
Yeah.
There's so much great stuff out there.
Love Darwin.
We can knuckle down and develop ourselves and be part of this great community of stuff out there. So, yeah.
So now we release our show every month. So remember to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you're over there on those platforms, then please give us a shout out, a review. Again, thank you everybody for your great reviews. We love that. Keep all the comments coming in. That's fantastic. And if you want to head over to our website with detailed show notes, it's at www.esotericmodulation.com.
And you can also look us up on Instagram and Facebook, where you can keep up to date with what's happening. And I think that rounds us up. Happy New Year again to everyone, yourself included, Ed. Hope you've had a great Christmas, end to the year, and a great start to the new one.
I look forward to our next one, Ben.
Yeah, me too. And you've still got time when the show airs to get involved with Jamuary. I wouldn't get caught up in it being daily or starting too late. Just post something. Be inspired, share some audio, create. Try and create every day if you can. It's even a few days in, it's been really good for me. So I'd love to see some Jamuary content.
Lovely. Have a great day, Ben, and talk to you soon.
Yeah. Cheers. See ya.
Bye-bye.